8. Martin tried to talk the archers out of shooting at the dragons again, but they didn't find his insults persuasive. They each knocked another arrow and hastily held them over the torch to light them, then dove back behind the trough while another thick blanket of fire rolled toward them. Of course, the fire breath stopped at the force field. Martin took this as a victory. He couldn't stop the dragon from breathing fire, but he could stop the fire from hitting anyone. And of course, the fire wouldn't actually injure a person if it did hit them. And so far, none of the people he had helped in this manner acted grateful or even noticed his assistance. But on a day like today, any victory seemed good.
"You can stand up!"
the giant floating image of Martin yelled.
"I'm holding back the fire with my magic!"
The men didn't stand, or even move. From behind the trough, one of them yelled,
"Then why don't you use your magic to kill the dragon for us?"
"I can't. Sorry."
"Is your magic not strong enough?"
"I guess you could say that."
"Then we'll keep hiding. Thanks."
The dragon ran out of breath. Martin clearly caused it distress, but it held its ground. The archers stood, aiming their arrows.
"It's a fire-breathing dragon,"
Martin said, floating down closer to the men.
"Why do you think flaming arrows will hurt it?"
"Flaming arrows are better than regular arrows,"
one of the archers said.
"But fire won't hurt it."
"Won't help it either. And there's still the arrow. Pull!"
Martin flew between the men and the dragon.
"Guys, stop! I can't let you shoot those! You're just setting your own town on fire! The dragons are harmless!"
The horned dragon behind Martin chose that moment to belch out another plume of fire, directly at his back. Martin's world reduced to two sensations, bright orange light and searing pain. He screamed in agony, surprise, and frustration at having his last statement so quickly and succinctly refuted. The force field between himself and the archers remained in place, so he knew the archers were being spared this pain. When the flames died away, he saw that they had once again hidden behind the trough, this time with their flaming arrowheads sticking up like antennae. The archers sprung to their feet, knocked their bows again, and took aim. Their leader said,
"Out of the way, wizard!"
Martin said,
"No!"
He had expected that they would wait for his next sentence, in which he'd explain yet again how what they were doing was counterproductive. But the leader said,
"Suit yourself. Aim for between his legs, boys. Try to fire through the gap."
Martin got out of the way, still shouting,
"No, don't do it!"
Again, the men loosed their arrows in unison. Again, they only flew a short distance before they struck Martin's force field and bounced up and back over the archers' heads. This time, instead of watching, Martin acted. He quickly threw up another force field between the archers and the building behind them. The force field successfully protected the already smoldering building. Unfortunately, quicker than Martin could react, the arrows bounced off of it and fell limply back down onto the very men who had fired them. Not every man got hit, but they all shouted at Martin as if they did. Martin apologized profusely until Gwen swooped by, medevaced the lot of them, shook her head at Martin, and moved on. Martin shouted,
"It wasn't all my fault!"
Then he found himself again enveloped in flames from the horned dragon behind him. Martin flew up out of the fire and away from the dragon. He deactivated his macro, reducing again to his normal size. He took a second to survey the scene. He found far too much scene to survey quickly, and resorted to activating the battlecom and asking,
"Philip, what's going on?"
Philip floated high above the town, coordinating.
"Actually, it's a good time to make a general report. Pretty much the entire town is taking refuge in the church. My offensive power, Gary's, and Martin's seem pretty useless. The dragons aren't running from us anymore. Roy has successfully pushed one dragon out of town. Where are you now, Roy?"
"I think about 20 miles out to sea, but it's hard to tell. The flight path hasn't been straight. I can't hurt this thing, just push it around. Do we know how to kill them yet?
Philip said,
Jeff?
If I knew, I'd have said something when they first showed up.
Right,
Philip said.
We'll all discuss that later. Tyler's also having some luck. He turned into a dragon, fought one of the real dragons, and if you look to the northeast, you'll see that he's now chasing it out of town.
Actually, it's chasing me, Tyler said.
But anything that works is fine. I just hope this isn't a Pepe Le Pew situation.
Indeed,
Philip said.
So we have a house fire and 3 more dragons to get out of here. Ideas?
Gary said.
They all followed the big one that likes Martin.
Martin said.
It's tried to kill me 4 times.
Gwen said.
Well, some of us aren't great at expressing our feelings.
My point,
Gary continued,
is that if we can get that one to go, the other 2 might follow.
Philip said,
Yes. Then, even if Roy and Tyler's dragons return, they'll follow it. Good idea, Gary.
As if wanting to prove Gary's point, the horned dragon had taken flight, and the 2 remaining dragons fell in behind it. Gary said,
Thanks. Okay, so how do we get Horny to leave?
Please,
Philip said.
Don't call it that.
But it's the only one with horns.
That's just an excuse.
Yeah, but it's a good one.
Martin said,
Giant me just made it aggressive. Flashes of light scared it off, but it came right back.
Britt said, We're almost done with the wounded. I don't see anyone else out in the open. Maybe my macro would freak it out. Gwen, can you finish up without me?
Yeah, I just told some townsfolk that we're putting the wounded to sleep so they can rest and recuperate. Now I'm going to pop back to my time and buy some infrared goggles so I can see if any wounded are hiding from us.
Philip said,
Sounds good. I say do it.
Gwen said,
I'm glad, because I already did. I left right after I said I was going to go. Spent a week, saw some family, bought some fabric. Anyway, I'll start the search.
Philip said,
Good. Yes, do.
Gwen said,
I already have.
Britt said, All right, intercepting Horny. So I try to get him out into the countryside, then what? We don't know how to kill them. Martin said,
If we can really run them off, great. If not, we can do like Gwen did. Go away, figure out how to deal with them, and come back to this moment.
Britt flew quickly into the dragon's flight path. She set a collision course with the lead dragon and triggered her macro, suddenly becoming a swarm of Brits, all flying straight down the dragon's throats. The horned dragon in the lead flew through the Brit cloud as if it didn't exist. The second, which flew behind and a bit to the side of the leader, had seen the Brit cloud approaching as well and followed the horned dragon through. The third dragon's view seemed to have been blocked by the 2 lead dragons. It panicked when it saw a cloud of countless fast-moving objects arcing around the other 2 dragons and into its path. It reared back, flapped its wings madly, dove, turned, and flew at top speed in the opposite direction, pursued by the Brits.
Well done, love,
Philip said.
Think you can keep at it until the dragon's a few miles away?
No problem,
Britt said.
Good. That leaves us with 2. The leader seems stubborn, but let me try something.
Martin landed in an abandoned street and watched as a stream of Philip's missiles streaked down from on high. They tore through the air in a constant dotted line, far more of them than ever could have come from a real plane, hitting the tail of the horned dragon and exploding at a sustained rate of 3 or 4 a second. The horned dragon flew much faster. The second dragon also flew much faster in the opposite direction. From its point of view, its fellow dragon disappeared, replaced by a deafening, sustained explosion. As the smaller dragon fled from the noise and the fire and the smoke, the line of missiles split. Halfway up the stream, the missiles stopped pursuing the horned dragon and instead targeted the rear of the smaller dragon. When the missiles started to make contact, the dragon made for the horizon at top speed.
Okay,
Philip said.
I'll keep the pressure on this one.
Martin asked,
Why'd you switch targets to the other dragon? You left Gary and me with the biggest, meanest one, and now it's angry.
I just answered my own question, didn't I?
Admirably, Philip said. Now get to it. That scary dragon isn't going to attack itself.
Martin gritted his teeth, shook his head. Past experience gave him reason to fear that Gary's assistance would make the task slightly harder than dealing with a dragon by himself.
Gary, you got any ideas?
Martin turned and saw that Gary stood next to him in the middle of the road, holding Uzi submachine guns in both hands. Martin barely had time to cover his ears before Gary started firing them both at the dragon as it flew above the town, hundreds of yards away. It seemed Gary had worked some programming magic to give the guns unlimited ammo, because he held both triggers down, dispensing lead as if he were holding two garden hoses. It also seemed that his aim with the stub-barreled firearms wasn't great, since instead of fleeing, the dragon turned gracefully and flew in low and close for a good look at what was making the noise. Soon it became painfully obvious that the bullets weren't powerful enough to deter the dragon in the least, since it landed down the street, spread its wings, and roared as Gary continued to fire both guns.
Okay!
Gary shouted over the automatic gunfire.
I've got its attention! Now, you do something!
Martin, still covering his ears, again triggered his macro, transformed into his 30-foot-tall silver form, and did the first thing he could think of. He kicked Gary. Gary stopped firing as he flew to the side of the street and hit a wall. Martin took his hands down from his ears. The dragon let out a large plume of fire, but Martin managed to get a force field erected in time to spare himself the pain. When the dragon had emptied its lungs, it saw Martin still standing there, unharmed. The dragon brought its head low, pointed its horns forward, and drew its body down and back, like a sprinter in the starting blocks. Martin lifted his staff to fly, but Gary shouted,
No! Stop! Let it try! I have an idea!
Martin moaned, but did what Gary asked. The dragon ran forward. Martin turned and ran a few steps to soften the blow. As he was still in his giant Martin form, the dragon's horns hit him squarely in his giant rear end. Martin's real body was protected inside of the larger structure, but the sudden acceleration still jarred him quite badly. He heard Gary shout,
Tuck and roll!
So he did, careening down the street like a poorly made soccer ball. Martin came to a stop many yards away.
I thought you had an idea!
He shouted as he lifted his immense form up to its hands and knees.
I did,
Gary said.
It worked! Look!
Martin peered back and saw that the dragon had come to a stop after ramming him, but had also lined itself up to ram him again.
Now you just play kick the can,
Gary said.
Only you're the can. I'll follow along and use force fields to keep you on course if I have to.
The dragon lunged forward. Martin didn't like the plan, but he didn't have time to argue, and had no better idea of his own. He stood up, turned his back, and the dragon rammed him again. He tucked and rolled again. Martin hated it again. He had to admit, though, the plan would probably work. The street they were on led to the edge of town, and it would only take 4 or 5 more butts in the butt to get there. The dragon made contact again. This time a bit off-center. Martin rolled to the right, towards some poor person's hut. Just before he made contact with the fragile building, he struck an invisible force field and ricocheted like a billiard ball, striking another force field on the other side of the street before stopping.
If Gary's smart, he has walls set up all the way down both sides of the street, Martin thought. That can be a pretty big if.
He looked down the street. At the edge of town, the road turned. A hut on the outside edge of the turn blocked his rolling path to the field beyond.
Should I take off and fly out of town?
He asked hastily before taking another impact from the rear.
No,
Gary said.
Keep rolling. This is working. I'll worry about the building.
Martin came to a stop, glanced up, and saw that one more shot would send him into the hut's closest wall, and possibly through its farthest wall immediately afterward. Whatever Gary planned to do, he hoped he'd do it quickly. The dragon hit Martin. Martin rolled forward toward the hut and hit the invisible force field ramp. Later, Martin would grudgingly agree that the ramp had been a good idea, and Gary would refuse to admit that it had been poorly executed. A long, shallow ramp allows a rolling object's momentum to change direction with a minimum of violent shock and results in a low, flat trajectory and a less jarring impact as well. Gary, however, made his ramp almost a perfect 45-degree angle. When Martin hit it, he felt like he'd hit a concrete wall. His mass flew almost straight up in the air. He untucked, centrifugal force pulled his limbs outward, and he cartwheeled gracelessly in space before landing like a sack of laundry in the hut's backyard. In his ear, he heard Roy say,
"Inbound hut, 1 mile out."
Martin moaned and rolled over on his back. He saw the horned dragon land on the hut's roof, spread its wings, inhale, and start to cough out a blanket of fire with which to smother Martin. Then the dragon disappeared with a deafening crack, and the two streaks receding into the distance, one a dull beige, and next to it a line of orange fire.